Welcome to Kinfolk Lore. We're excited to share our love for some of our favorite stories with you. This week, we'll be exploring the politics of one of our most beloved fantasy worlds. We are back in Westeros to cover House of the Dragon on HBO. I'm Andrea.
And she's listening to her favorite Westerosi bard on repeat. It's going down. And I am Paul. Our returning listeners will know that we're cousins who started this podcast because we love to talk about fantasy and sci-fi shows. In the past, we've covered His Dark Materials, The Witcher, Avatar The Last Airbender, The Legend of Korra, and Lovecraft Country, and we've loved every moment of it. We're excited to dive into the larger canon of A Song of Ice and Fire and talk about the history of this expansive world.
This week, we'll be discussing the third episode of House of the Dragon, Second of His Name, which aired on HBO this past Sunday. So, if you haven't seen it yet, go watch it and come back after. We'll be discussing the content of the show and some of the differences between Fire and Blood and the series, but we will not be spoiling future events on the show.
There's like a cool connotation between that, like House of the Dragon, Second of His Name, like it's the second Game of Thrones series and second of it. Anyway, I did not come out here for the politicking, the money grubbing, and arse licking. I am here for the pod. And because I'm here for the pod, we're going to have adult content. If you're here for the origin story of a pleasure house queen, she kind of like runs loose now. You know, you may have heard of her, the Black Swan. She's kind of the shit. Or some sticking it with the pointy end by the fireside. You have come to the right place. Let's go.
Right. So let's discuss some of the important plot points from this episode. 3 years after the events of last week's episode, King Viserys and a very pregnant Queen Alicent have gathered the lords and ladies of the realm for a hunt in honor of Prince Aegon's second name day. George, every prince does not need to be named Aegon.
Yeah, no. And
it's a lot of Aegons. A
lot of Aegons going down. Whole lot of Aegons.
So word on the street is there's a white hart, aka stag, in the woods, a royal omen.
And before on they this leave, day, imagine what it would be. I'm Otto Hightower. I find meaning in anything that will advance my whole design.
I'm here for all the dunking on Otto Hightower. I will never stop you from dunking on Otto Hightower.
Fucking hate
him. He is the absolute worst.
The worst.
So before they leave, the king receives a report of some troubling news in the Stepstones. But he's not interested. He just wants to celebrate Aegon's birthday.
From a very persistent Tywin Lannister. He's like, yeah, bro, I know you're trying to hit up the snack table. I know that you're like trying to go hit to the buffet. Let me talk to you while you grab those crab cakes, okay? I just want to get this in. There's some shit going down.
And Alicent, with the wisdom of a wife, was like, don't talk to him while he eats, basically. Like, she gave him the, no. The king does not allow people to speak to him while he's eating.
Oh, my God.
At the hunt camp, after a extremely clumsy and cringy marriage proposal from one Jason Lannister.
Do you come here often? Did you, if you look across the ocean at Lannisport, you'll be able to see the wall from where we stand. And I haven't quite built a dragon pit yet. I'd do anything for my queen or my lady wife.
Disgusting. My notes had a single, it's not even a word. It just said, ew.
Ew.
Like, just ew. This guy, ugh. So after that unfortunate exchange, Princess Rhaenyra decides she's out. She's not staying for this hunt. She's gonna leave as well. And she gets on her horse and she is followed by Sir Crispin. That name is gonna stick. I know his name is Sir Christian. I'm still calling him Sir Crispin. I don't care what anyone says. That's his name. They end up making camp in the King's Wood and are attacked by a boar. With Sir Crispin's help, Rhaenyra kills the boar.
Murks this motherfucker. Like, murks. like everything that she was upset about at the camp just got taken out on this boar. Like, I wish a motherfucker would. Why did he run up on me like this? She's upset.
Listen, if Bobby B had her frustration and anger and quickness with the knife, he would still be alive. I'm just saying. She survived the night.
Yeah.
King Viserys, back at camp, just wants to be left alone with his wine during the hunt. After arguing with Rhaenyra earlier, he wants to sulk without the intrusion of others, including, once again, Jason Lannister, who comes to press his marriage proposal. Otto Hightower, who wants to betroth 17-year-old Rhaenyra, 17 years old, to her 2-year-old brother, who he was just talking about eating porridge with his hands.
Viserys is like, he's two, all right? Like, he starts cracking up laughing. He's like, yo, you know what? I just came out here to hunt. You motherfuckers are too much. Just way too much.
It's just doing, how's Hightower doing the most in this episode?
Oh my God. Otto came in like, it wasn't even subtle. He's like, so what do you think about Jason Lannister? He's all like, his pride has pride. That motherfucker. I'm done with him. And he's like, well, you know, there is somebody a little closer to home that you may like even more.
It was the most disturbing. How do you out Targaryen the Targaryens? Like, when a Targaryen is laughing in your face about the fact that you just made a betrothal proposal, and they're like, that's even perverse for us.
Yeah.
Like, you've gone around the bend, sir. Anyway.
And like, his actual argument is my argument for why Viserys should have, like, thought about Lena Valerion is like, well, you know, it would stop all the marriage proposals and then you'd just be able to wait it out. So now you flip the script. You've totally gone the opposite direction of, like, what your initial argument was to get your daughter hitched. Okay, cool. I see where you're at, bro. This is, like, clearly he's starting to see where this guy is coming from.
I mean, it doesn't help that right after Otto leaves, Lionel Strong comes along, and the king, you know, thinks he's going to press one of his sons as a potential suitor, and he says, no, no, no. The princess should marry Lenor Valerian, because that just makes sense for the same reasons I outlined to you last episode and you ignored me.
Yeah, yeah. He's like, some years ago, I told you that you should do this thing and then you didn't do it. So, you know, the rift hasn't changed between your houses. He is the richest man in the realm, talking about Corlys. Like, yeah, get your daughter and his son together, because that just seems to make the most sense. I mean, you flatter me that you think my son, because of his military prowess, is, like, somebody you would consider. Cool. But, like, yeah, still a bad strategic move, my dude. Like, really, really bad.
Viserys afterwards tells Allison that he's not sure he made the right decision. He talks a lot about a dream that he had, the same dream that he told Emma about. And he thinks that he might be a Targaryen dreamer. And we will put a pin in that and come back to that later.
He's mad saucy. Let's just say that as well. Like, even, you know, even Alicent is like, it's too late for this shit. Okay, you're about to go into story time. I came out here to get you before you fall in the fire drunk on your face. Okay, like, the next day, a stag is caught for the king to kill. But it isn't the White Hart stag. That stag, the White Hart stag, appears to Rhaenyra and Sir Crispin, emphasis on the crisp, as they head back towards camp. Rhaenyra tells Crispin to spare the stag's life. She wants to make, you know, he pulls out his sword. He's about to go get the white stag. He wants to honor. She's like, no, 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 let it go. Back in the Red Keep, after speaking to Alicent, Viserys decides to send aid to Daemon and speak to Rhaenyra. Allison actually had some good advice in this episode, for sure.
Yeah, she did.
So he promises her that he will not abandon her as the heir, but reminds her of her duty to marry. He tells her to make her own choice, as he did, but it should be a strategic one. This scene is great. I can't wait to get to talk about this scene more. We're going to talk about it. It's great. When Daemon receives a message from his brother saying that he will help him, Daemon beats the shit out of the messenger. He just can't take it. And he decides he would rather put everything on the line, including his life, rather than accept help after 3 fucking years from the king. He plans his surrender to the crab feeder, but it's not a real surrender. It's a trap. He takes Dark Sister back from the guy he gave it to, slices him open, and continues and proceeds to wreck shop. And then the Valyrian forces come in, show up as the Triarchy forces are flushed out of the caves and when they least expect it. And then from the skies, shout out to Laenor Valyrian and his dragon, Sea Smoke, lighting everyone up. It's amazing.
So happy to have Sea Smoke with us.
So good. The battle ends with Prince Daemon dragging the crab feeder's half body out of the cave. In the words of my boy Tywin, we have won. Oh, man. What an episode. What an episode.
So much went down in this episode in both little and large ways. So, like, we have the introduction of a new dragon rider.
Mm-hmm.
Also, a potential suitor for mm-hmm. Rhaenyra. We have a whole bunch of new characters. I mean, they just almost overwhelmed me with the number of people that were introduced in this episode. Some of whom I think are worth watching. Some of whom I think are, you know, just there for kind of like the book readers. We might not see them again.
So why don't we go through some of them? Why don't we like check out like who are like, so like, obviously we're going to start with Jason Lannister and Tywin Lannister.
Oh God. The twins.
The twins. Twins. These Lannisters have a lot of twins, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it does run in families.
It does. It does. Well, I mean, Tywin actually, he's like, Jason's like, Tywin, he's such a bore. Oh God. And he's like, but he has a job. He has a real job. He's like on the King's Council and he's giving pretty important updates to the king, although the king could not be bothered with any of the news. And I think you see the stark difference between Tywin, who's like, you know, kind of like has like this idea that he has to like help with the information, making sure the king is aware, and Jason, who's looking at it like, what's the power play? Like he wants to get to Rhaenyra, and ipse facto he wants to either be king consort or get her if she like displaces if she gets this place to come to Castle Rock. But he's not worried about the realm. He's worried about his house.
Yeah. I mean, I think we saw over and over again in this episode, second sons, right? Mm-hmm. An ongoing theme of the show. Even though he was born probably seconds after Jason, Tywin is a second son. So he is not going to inherit a bunch of lands and be Lord of Casterly Rock. He has to work for a living. And so he actually cares about his job at this moment. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that we can, we'll go through the character list, but like also we met Vaemon Velaryon in this, and he's also a second son. So I think we're starting to see a little bit of that theme of the second sons.
Vaemon Velaryon, who is, you know, second son, disinherited heir to Driftmark, master of complaints.
When your teenage nephew is dunking on you publicly, it's low.
Yo, I was rolling when he called him the master of complaints. I could not help it. I was like, yo, this is hilarious.
But also, I just wanted to note that we also see some interesting politicking happening in House Hightower, because we meet the first son of that house too, which is Holbert Hightower, Otto's older brother, who gives Otto directions the way that Otto gives Alicent directions. So I think there's a lot of second son energy going on here. Like who's in charge and who has an interest in advancing the house and who actually just like wants to get stuff done.
Without question. And Holbert is also gaining popularity in the streets for giving out nicknames. He's like, here, hail Aegon, the conquering babe. Like, what? Like, so now he's giving him the Aegon the Conqueror moniker when he shows up? Yeah, Hobart's a wild guy.
Absolutely wild stuff from House Hightower. Like, the king is still alive. This is, like, borderline treasonous to me. I had so many issues with them.
There's a lot of treason in this episode. There's a lot of treason in this episode.
A lot of borderline treason, maybe outright treason.
Yeah, a little light treason and outright treason is happening in this episode.
So let's just go through the other new characters. And so we mentioned Vaemond Valerian. We also got to spend a little bit of time with Lenore Valerian, who we have seen before. He was at the tourney in the first episode. He was much younger then. Mm-hmm. But is, you know, a battle-tested warrior at this point on Dragonback. Like, I was impressed. And
we have never
seen
a dragon rider in this show full armor. Like he was full armor. Like, yes, you know, they all had, like, different things that they've worn. But until Daemon and him, like, I've not seen full armored riders on dragon. And it was really, really cool. Like, Daemon was riding on Caraxes with his armor. And then he was fully armored with the House Valyrian armor, like riding on the back of a dragon. It was absolutely amazing. Amazing.
And he was so hyped to be riding this dragon in battle. Uh-huh. It was like deeply relatable.
Yeah.
He was like, yeah, Dracarys. I'm a fan already. I liked him. I love Sea Smoke. I think that Sea Smoke, who I think is a male dragon, looked beautiful.
Yeah.
Smaller than Caraxes for sure, but fast. So there's some benefit to having a smaller, younger dragon.
100%.
We also met Larys Strong, who, you know, he's Lionel's younger son, second or third son of his household. He has a disability, so he's not part of the hunt, but he's there for, you know, Little politicking, cozying on up to the ladies.
Be wary of the dude who's like, hey, you know what? I can't do any physical activity. I just want to hang out where everybody's talking about the palace intrigue. What are you guys talking about? I want to know what I want to be in the know. Like he's got a little bit of an airy quality to that guy already. I'm just keep an eye on him.
Yep.
Keep an eye on him for sure.
We also met Lady Redvine, who I think is probably going to be a very minor character. I would not be surprised if we saw her again, just because of who is playing her.
Speaking of light treason.
I know. I told, but like she had that Olenna Tyrell energy. Yeah. Guess what? She is her ancestor. So.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I mean, when like this shows you where Viserys really is. That people are out and out speculating about, you know, they're letting it slip to him a little bit too. Like you think about the conversation with him and Jason Lannister, is that they're out and out speculating about whether or not he's going to keep Rhaenyra as the heir. It's pretty open speculation. And then you have Lady Redwine here who's saying whether the king wants to admit it or not, the crown is at war. So now you're basically saying that the king is like deceiving his people. We're at war and he needs to do something about it. And it's just borderline. Like people are just out and out saying things that in a normal kingdom where people have respect for the king, it would be treason and you could potentially see the axe. You know what I mean? It's a hanging.
Yeah. It's not that people won't criticize the crown, but she's criticizing the crown in front of both the queen and the princess.
Yeah, exactly.
Like she has no concerns about saying what she's saying. In fact, I think she hopes that it gets back to him.
And I think the funny thing is that I took it from what Rhaenyra does when she says, "And what have you done, Lady Redwine, for the realm besides eat cake?" I thought that she was only that kind of sharp with her retort because of what she was saying about Daemon. Not really so much about what she was saying about her dad. She was like, oh, okay, yeah. Until he started really saying the things about Daemon, it was like, okay, you know what? I'm about had enough of your shit.
Yeah, I think that she was took offense to being called to the carpet for something that Damon had done. You know, she's basically like, I haven't spoken to Damon in years. Like, but at least Damon is doing something.
Yeah.
Because before she enters this conversation, they're talking about the fact that another lady, another highborn lady, Lady Joanna, has been human trafficked.
Yeah, 100%. 100%.
At least Damon is responding to this horror. The king is just like, I don't even want to deal with it. After 3 years, Otto is out here saying, you know, well, they went to war without him. Okay, but as Alicent points out, like, obviously this guy is a problem. So are you just going to sit here and do nothing?
Yeah, and there was a real game being played there because here's this late, here there, you know, here, you know, Lady Lannister, who is Jason and Tywin's mom, comes out of the gate right away. And she's all like, oh, like, you haven't seen him since you got kind of removed him as the heir, replaced him as the heir. And then Alicent comes to, you know, Rhaenyra's defense. And so, but Rhaenyra doesn't want her defending her because there's still a lot of shit in the game between the two of them. So she's like, I don't really want you to have my back. And then on top of that, now you got red wine coming for Damon and her dad. And she's like, yeah, I'm not good with that either. So it was like, she walked in, when you see Rhaenyra, she walks in and she's kind of got a, I don't know what I could add, kind of like a light disposition, thing it was going to be light conversation. And it turned heavy real quick. And I think it put her in a very, very strange spot, especially on the heels of what the conversation was, right? Because they're talking about another highborn lady, as you said, being kidnapped, named Joanna. Do you want to talk about that before we go to the next character a little bit?
Yeah, this is like a very small part of Fire and Blood. It's mentioned almost in passing. Mm-hmm. But Lady Joanna Swan was 15 years old when she was kidnapped by the crab feeder and his minions and ransomed. Her uncle, who was the Lord of Stonehelm, would not pay the ransom. Was like, no, you can keep her.
Damn.
And so she was sold to a pleasure house in Lys, where she became known as the Black Swan, and essentially became the ruler of Lys. Like, she basically built so much power there that they called her the ruler of Lys in name, in everything but name. So she made something, you know, good out of this horrible situation, I guess. But yeah, it's just like the fact that this happened and it wasn't immediately like a horror story and there was no call to action is kind of shocking.
Yeah.
Like, a little bit shocking that, like, the crab feeder not only feels like he can overtax ships and attack merchant ships, but that he can human traffic people and get away with it. And it's just like, fine, that's okay with the king. It's crazy.
And I think that that's a lot of what's happening in this, you know, when you talk about that story, it's a lot of what's at stake here that I think Viserys hasn't actually been able to understand, that if people can do these kind of things to you, if they can openly talk treasonously, if they can openly traffic people that are your subjects, if they can openly do whatever they want, then there is no, that's not going to hold the realm together. Like, people are not going to stop there. And I think that's why I think Damon is so pissed at him coming, you know, being a Johnny come lately, is he's basically like, dude, like, we've been out here, we're in the trenches. And I think that's where Rhaenyra's statement and her upset about people, like, when she says nobody's here for me, and the different connotations that has when they're on their way to the hunt, it's showing you that, in how she ends the episode, it's really showing you a lot, like, these stories, all the stories that are there, even the song the bard sings, they're all stories of people who have basically gone through really tough circumstances and come out victorious right at the jaws of defeat. They've come out on the other side of it victorious when all signs pointed to them losing.
So do we want to keep going through some of the other characters?
Let's talk about someone else is there. I think we got, like, we talk about Laris, but there's another strong boy here, Harwin Strong.
Yeah, definitely a character to watch. He is the elder son of Sir Lionel, who is these folks, the Strong family is Harrenhal is their castle. So, you know, their castle is already in ruins. Yeah. Not their fault. But they are a family that is strong in the Riverlands. Like that is their seat. He is known as the Breakbones, which should tell you what people think of him when there's a tourney. He's a known fighter, one of the strongest men in Westeros. So his name actually matches up.
Yeah.
To what he's known for. And then he's just a character to keep an eye on. Like he wasn't like very present in this episode. He was mentioned by King Viserys, but he also was present at some other times. But he for reference, he was one of the knights that kind of like smiled at Rhaenyra when she returned from her hunt. But he's definitely someone who's going to play a role in the future. So keep an eye on him.
He also was one of the people who was on the hunt, who was holding the stag that was killed. And we'll talk about that more as the season progresses. But I think like that's an important piece of like all these things that he's, what House of Dragon is doing, similar to what Game of Thrones has done, is they're giving you little bits of characters that you think, oh, these characters don't really matter much in the long run, but they end up actually playing out to be very important. And I love the way that they're doing that, and it really is a testament to what, you know, Miguel and Ryan are doing to kind of like keep the theme of like, here are these characters, there's so many people that play and so many people play a part in the outcome, and everyone has some importance, even if they're on the screen. Like there's not a lot of throwaway characters, you know, not a whole bunch. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, of this like new group, I would say Lady Red Wine is the only one that I'm not sure if we'll see her again. Yeah. It would be delightful to see her again. I have a lot of affection for this actress. She played Mrs. Gardner in the 1995 version of Pride and Prejudice. So I like her a lot. But I don't know how much we'll expect to see her. But all of these other new characters are going to play some role in the Dance of the Dragons. So I know it's a lot for people to keep track of. And I think it's totally fine if you feel a little bit lost. I saw some folks, especially on Reddit, being like, I cannot keep track of all of these characters. Are they important? That's totally fine. Like, that was how the first season of Game of Thrones felt, too. You will have enough time to get to know folks. So I wouldn't worry about it if you didn't catch like every single character.
So the guy who plays Jason Lannister in this also plays the knight who dies at Ned Stark's tourney.
I know. I caught that on Twitter.
Hilarity.
I think it's really funny.
Yeah.
He's great. I mean, I have to say, like, I think he's great. You know, I think the acting in this season is much better in some places than in Early Thrones. So yeah. I'm thoroughly enjoying the whole cast so far.
Yeah, I agree. Now that we've got like some of the new players on the board, let's talk about where we first start, which is in the battle scene. And I think that in that battle scene, which is hilarity. I mean, the guy's like, you know, cursing at the crab feeder, and he's like, you know, they're gonna, you know, Corlys Velaryon, House Velaryon's gonna, like, you know, basically he's gonna fuck you up. And then he sees Prince Daemon coming with Caraxes, and he's calling out to him just to get smashed by Caraxes, like, foot.
Hysterical. Like, I mean, not like a funny haha moment in the way that I'm proud of, but it was, I was like, dude, this is not going to end well for you. You understand that you will also burn in dragon fire. And then he actually just smashed him.
Yeah.
This goes out to all our fallen homies, yo.
Blood low liquor.
Don't let the chin get like that, y'all.
Poor guy.
Poor guy. Did not see, I mean, it wasn't going to end well for him any way you look at it, but I mean, at Caraxes, you get a real sense of his size in this moment. When he comes down and steps on this guy, just how big his claws are, how big he is as a dragon. I don't understand the strategy of landing the dragon and like just burning people and walking through. Like I don't get that. I would have just kept flying and just burning people. But I think Damon's just fed up. He's trying to draw him out. Like, yo, come out. I mean, not convincing, Damon, that I would come out if you're on dragon back burning motherfuckers alive. Like, I'm not coming out to fight you. You're not going to shoot the fair one with me, you know?
Totally. This kind of reminded me of the like Robb Stark, like, should we fight in single combat? Yeah. Like, Robb is like, no. He's like, I won't win.
Yes.
But I know my military can kick your ass. So
yeah.
Good stuff. So I thought this was a great rollout of the dragons in like an actual battle, because it also just shows, like, reminds us, we knew this already from Game of Thrones, but like, it's a reminder that these are weapons of mass destruction. They do not know the difference between friend and foe. So you have like, you know, a loyalist here getting stomped by the very dragon that he thought was going to save him. And I think the whole audience knew, dude, like, that's not going to happen. Like, this dragon is not going to know the difference between you and the crab feeders fighter. So I thought that was excellent. I believe that this is the only dialogue that Damon has in this episode, which is kind of shocking.
When he's calling the crab feeder out. Because he's such a present part of the episode, but he really only has, the only dialogue is him calling out to the crab feeder wanting to have this battle. And then the rest of it is he's a man of action. That was it. Like, listen, I'm done. I'm just going to like, I'm going to fuck up this messenger and I'm going to make sure that I end this war today so my brother can't get any of the glory. Let's go.
Yeah. It was extraordinary how little Damon said in this whole episode. And I thought this was also a good reminder that while dragons cannot be harmed by fire or by arrows, their riders can be harmed.
Yeah.
And I think we're supposed to note that because we are going to see in the show a lot of dragons in the field. Like, there's going to be a lot of dragon battles. So I thought that this was a pretty good rollout. And I also noted, like, immediately just how massive Caraxes is. I was stunned at his size.
Yeah. It was.
And now I'm like, it's a good thing that him and Syrax are apparently, you know, buddies, because Syrax is not that big.
Not that big. Not that big at all. But, I mean, the biggest dragon that we know of, other than Caraxes, is going to be Vhagar, right? And we haven't seen Vhagar yet. So let's see where that goes. So after that scene, we end up with, obviously, they go to the feast and the king is looking for Rhaenyra. And Rhaenyra is in the Godswood hanging out with Yaskier's cousin who lives in Westeros.
Toss a coin to your witch. Oh, wait, wrong show.
No, but he's got a hit on a different continent, right? He's going off about Under the Dragon's Eye. Is Under the Dragon's Eye going to move up the charts here the way that Toss a Coin did? I don't know.
No, I just didn't. I know that Rhaenyra is in her feelings and is doing exactly what teenage girls tend to do in their feelings, just play their favorite song on repeat. But
perhaps the queen would like, perhaps the princess would like to hear a different song. Perhaps she would not play it again.
And this song is pretty, most definitely about Rhaenyra. Nymeria, right? It talks about her ships.
Yeah, it's about Nymeria. It's about the Rhoynar, and it's about their battle with the dragon lords of Valyria, and how she fled in her ships with her heart broken for her people. and how she ended, and the story really ends, you know, Nymeria obviously ends up coming and establishing in Dorne House Martell as the head of all of Dorne. Like she is one of the most revered figures in Dorne throughout all of that region, is Nymeria. I think it's like an interesting thing that they're doing here with her having this song on repeat and Allison knowing, being the only person to know where to find her. Why? Because we saw in episode one that the two of them were hanging out in the Godswood and that they were talking about Nymeria and they were talking about this history and she was putting on that she didn't know and Allison was very engaged in the history. And I think this shows how far the relationship has come where she doesn't even acknowledge Allison when she walks in and she's talking about, and this song is talking about heartbreak. And it's also has a lot of underlying themes about what could come with the dance. Like that there's, you know, this resistance to, that's happening and having to flee and being alone. And it's a song about someone who's alone, who has to leave their homeland and has to be on their own.
Yeah, and I also think we should note the story of Nymeria, you know, in establishing Dorne, right? The Dornish don't have these traditions of the firstborn son is automatically heir.
Mm-hmm.
This is like a real sticking point in the original book series, because the Martells, they don't have a problem with women ruling.
Nope.
They have princesses of Dorne. In fact, when Aegon, you know, initially tries to conquer Dorne, there's a princess, not a prince.
Yeah.
So they're in their tradition, in the Rhoynar tradition, the firstborn child is heir, not the firstborn son. So I think it's interesting to make this connection between Nymeria and Rhaenyra, and I can totally see why. Like probably most little girls in Westeros, Rhaenyra is a big fan of Nymeria, right? Like she, she's obviously like a hero to young women. But I think it's especially important since she is feeling like she's about to be removed as heir any moment. And here is this story of a woman who was a queen. Okay, so do we want to talk a little bit just about like the dynamics between Allison and Rhaenyra? Because
yeah,
I feel like Allison was real quick to remind the bard that she was the queen.
Yeah, she was. She pulled rank right away. I think, and it was a change, right? Because Rhaenyra was like, "Your princess commands you," and then she went right to, "Your queen commands you to like leave," and so he had to leave. And it was another example of how the dynamics have changed between the two of them from where they were when we first met them, you know?
Yeah, and I think I would say, to give Allison the benefit of the doubt here, I would say that moment of pulling rank, I think she thought she was doing something that would, one, be good for Rhaenyra, because it seems like Rhaenyra is constantly isolating herself, but two, also just trying to please Viserys, who was very disturbed that his daughter wasn't present and didn't seem to want to come with them. I don't think it was necessarily like a nefarious like pull of rank. And the only reason it really stuck out to me was because later in this episode, when he's talking to Otto, Otto's like, "Dude, you're not just her father. Like, you're the king. Tell her what to do."
Yeah.
Like, you don't have to negotiate with her. She is one of your subjects, even though she is your daughter. And Viserys responds, "But I don't want to do that. Like, I want her to be happy. I don't want to order her to do something." And so I want to say that I do think Allison probably wouldn't have pulled rank if she didn't feel like she was trying to be helpful. But it was such a stark difference from only, you know, a few moments later in the episode, her father saying, "No, I don't want to order her about. I want her to take my counsel and I want her to be happy. I don't want to make her do things." But
I think it also like kind of to put like a little bit of, I think it also shows Allison as being her father's daughter, right? Like that wouldn't have maybe been Viserys' approach if he found her in the Godswood, but that is her approach because she understands intimately the power dynamics at play. And I think that she is a little bit, she knew where to find Rhaenyra because she knows Rhaenyra. She knew, and nobody else could have found Rhaenyra where that was, but she knows Rhaenyra enough to know that she's going to be right there. And she also knows that Rhaenyra being right there is also a shot at her son. She doesn't, and her dad, and to her. She's like, I don't want to be around you people. You know what I mean? Like, so I think like there is that piece of what you're saying, but there's also the part of her that's like irritated that it even is this way and that Rhaenyra's acting how she's acting.
Oh, yeah. I think that's true as well. I do think that Allison is frustrated with Rhaenyra. We don't know this for sure, but my guess is that she's like tried to make some efforts at reconciling or at least making the peace, and Rhaenyra has been shutting it down. Mm-hmm. But I also think that we have to acknowledge that Rhaenyra is very much like a petulant teenager in much of this episode. And I think that there are times when I actually felt real sympathy for Viserys, because it's like having a conversation with her is frequently difficult, and she's unwilling to play the game that like she has to play, and everyone's telling her she has to play that game, and she's just like, I'm not interested in it. But like then you can't play. You have to make a decision here. Are you going to play the game, or are you going to not? And then if you're not going to play, then don't sulk about it.
I mean, but they're just woefully unaware. Like, I just feel like that whole crew is like, even the conversation when they're on the way to the hunt, like, you know, they're talking about childbirth in this very whimsical kind of way, not acknowledging that her mother died in childbirth. So that's what's changed her reality. Until they realize that they've put their foot in their mouth later on. And they're just like, you know, like they're having this huge celebration, but he barely talks to Rhaenyra. So like, obviously if she's been feeling this whole time, the only reason she got picked was because he wanted Daemon not to be the heir, and that it wasn't because he didn't have a male heir, and that like, you know, her mother died in the process of doing this. And he went 6 months, we know this, without really speaking to her about it. And then who knows how long he's been going in between that speaking to her. So he says, you know, why does everything have to be a battle with you? Well, I mean, in some ways, I feel like Viserys has fought a war of attrition, right? He's fought a war of like, I don't know how to deal with you, so I'm just going to disconnect. And by the way, I'm going to like act like, you know, willfully ignorant that I'm like going to have sex and marry your best friend. And I'm going to like, you know, do all these other things and act like, I don't understand why you're upset. It feels like she's being, if I was her, I would feel like, you guys are gaslighting me, right? Like, you guys are really, like, not serious. Because everything you're doing, you're saying I'm supposed to be cool with, but it doesn't feel like I should be cool with this shit, but you keep saying, like, I'm overreacting.
I don't disagree with your assessment of it, but I also think that there's some evidence that Rhaenyra is being as willful and difficult as Daemon because she's not getting her way.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And I think there is also a lack of self-awareness from her. And you even caught it when she was talking to Sir Crispy.
Sir Crispy. It's getting even better. Hey, Crispy. Oh, yeah. There we go.
Where he's basically like, you know, most people in the realm would trade places with you. And even in that moment, she can't be like, yeah, I know I'm privileged, but this is also really hard.
That's
like, because they don't know what I'm going through. Like, I definitely felt moments of a lot of frustration from the parental units. I was getting like big Geralt of Rivia with Ciri vibes. Okay, so we have this exchange between them where Rhaenyra is saying, where the king is like, remember, you have duties. And she's saying, I'm constantly reminded of them. And he's like, what? And she repeats it. And then she's also like, well, no one's talking to me. It's like part of playing this role is like those duties. So if people are either constantly reminding you to do them, or they're freezing you out. And I just, I hear what you're saying. I think you're entirely right that, like, Rhaenyra, I think, is emotionally being neglected. And I think that her father is coming up incredibly short. But I also think that she is a person who disengages at times when she needs to actually double down and engage.
Yeah, I just think that she's calling bullshit in a lot of ways. Like, you know, like, it's, and I'm with you on that. I do think that she wants what she wants. And so sometimes you can't be that way in life. You have to say, okay, this is what needs to happen. But I think she lets you in certain moments when she says things like, you know, is this like, okay, is this the king's command? Like, okay, then I'll do it. Or when she says, hey, you know, the two moments that really stuck out to me that were powerful were in the small council room and in the carriage. When she says to them in the carriage, nobody's here for me. I told you, you know, offline that I thought they had three different meanings. It's like, nobody's here at this hunt for me. Nobody's actually here for me emotionally. And none of you guys in this carriage are really here because for me, like, talking to me. And I think, like, that's how she's like, that's one of the moments where you see her and how she's really feeling. I also feel like in the small council room, when she gets there and she says, well, if this was, you know, Viserys is bloviating about duty and sometimes, like, being, you know, the heir, you have to be able to, like, make decisions that are best for the realm. And he starts talking about a story that she's heard a million times about the reason why he married her mom. And then he has to remind her that he did love her mom, even though it sounds when he's saying it like it was a power play. And she said, well, if this was really all about that, then why wouldn't you have married Lena Valerian? Like, why did you marry? And I think there's a lot being said in that. It's like, if you're really about this duty life that you're talking about, you would have married the more politically sound choice. And if that's not the case, then you married. And if that's not the case, then what you're saying is you married Allison for some sort of affection, which actually cuts Rhaenyra even deeper. And he's blind enough not to see that really cuts her deep, that, like, you had enough affection, you spent time with this other person while my mother was dead. I think there's a lot of this. She has genuine hurt that she's saying, like, yo, what are you talking about? Like, you didn't do this out of duty then.
I get that. I really do. But I also think that she, like, what was the play here? Okay. So they weren't there for her, mm-hmm. but she wouldn't be there.
Yeah.
Like, what was the play there? To leave her, ignore her, to treat her the way that they treat Damon? Like, with, you know, this is like one of the most difficult things about teaching, parenting teenagers is, like, actually you to show up for them. Sometimes you have to force them to show up. And so I hear what you're saying, but I also got some vibes from her that she's being a little bit of a brat.
But the other part of that, I agree with that. But I think the other part of it that we're missing, that we're not seeing, and you saw this a lot, like, we'll use an actual historical figure. Like, we'll use, you know, Henry VIII, right? He was a pretty, you know, he left a good will, but not, by all accounts, not a great dad, not a great husband, I mean, either, right? But the reality of it is that one thing that, so he didn't spend a lot of time, from all records, with his kids, and then he was gone. And what I've learned, you know, just off, like, being a dad of teenagers, is that the times where you get the actual truth about what's going on for them is not in the, like, let's have a conversation. It's in the doing of activities that they're interested in. It's in the showing up in the small moments of, like, let's go, like, ride dragons. Let's go do this. Let's go whatever it is. Like, I'm not riding dragons, but I'm saying in their case. And in those moments, then they start to talk to you about things that then you can put in your little computer and be like, oh, okay, that's what's going on. And Viserys seems to be so disconnected from that part of it. And that's where Emma was probably really connected. And I think part of the betrayal for Rhaenyra is that Allison was also really connected to her in that way. And now she just feels isolated and lonely because Damon's gone. Her mom is gone. Allison is with her dad and she has no one.
Yeah, totally. And I think Viserys is aware of that. He says so, right? Yeah. You are alone. You are angry. I don't really know what to do with you. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, he doesn't say that directly, but you can feel his frustration. And I'm not defending him. I'm just saying that she has real moments in this episode where she can make something into an opportunity and she just gets upset or angry instead. And then she expects everyone to kind of react to her anger in a way that, you know, is pleasing. And I get the sense that she's just kind of over it because she assumes she's not the heir anymore.
Yeah.
Again, all of these people could benefit from sitting down and just having a conversation or, you know, some therapy. Well, let's get the maesters to do some mental
family
health
therapy.
Training.
Like, there's no maester family therapy. What's happening with that? Like, there is a lack of mental health professionals in the maester community, it seems. They don't seem to sit people down and actually talk to them. I'm not down. We need to figure that out.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure. It's not great.
I think, like, to transition, maybe we talk about a little bit with this, whether or not, with based on everything we're saying, it was wise for Viserys to leave her in place as the heir. Is that the wisest choice in this moment?
Yeah, this is interesting to me. All right. So the show is telling us Viserys is a weak king. He's weak. Multiple times in this episode, his behavior, his actions are put up and essentially compared to mm-hmm. Rhaenyra and Daemon, two people of action. Mm-hmm. A little hot-tempered, but they get stuff done, mm-hmm. right? Whereas Viserys is spending this entire episode, like, really struggling physically and mentally, getting wasted.
In his bag.
Because he can't deal.
Yeah.
He can't deal. But then in the end, he decides, you know what? I'm sticking with Rhaenyra. Mm-hmm. I'm sticking with her. I think that's in part because the White Heart didn't appear, right? I feel like he's a person who really cares about omens. And then, you know, Otto kind of put it out there that, like, he doesn't care about omens, but this is an important one. Confirming what Viserys already cares about, which is, like, all of this, like, prophecy, omen, dreaming stuff. And then I think he's quite relieved when they find the stag and it's not the white stag. Because I think out of, like, to Otto, who we've established doesn't know how to deal with his teenage daughter, I think that he really wants to keep her in this position, in part just because it would be so devastating and harmful for her to remove her. He's already seen what that did to Daemon, his brother.
Yeah.
And also, like, I don't know if he can manage being estranged from Rhaenyra. I mean, he's a little bit estranged from her, but, like, really estranged from her. So he decides to stick with her by the end of the episode. Is this smart? Like, in my reading, I never really sat and considered this because, like, my feminist chops took mm-hmm. over. I was like, yes, stick with the girl. And she's the firstborn. But, like, let's look at this a little bit soberly. Like, do you think this is a smart decision strategically?
On its head, on its own, no. Like, I think that in a vacuum, you would say no, because, like, if he doesn't make some other moves, which is what I think he's attempting to do here, is he's attempting to say, we got to get you having heirs. We got to get you married. I got to show that the line is strong, because then at that point, then you have other people, other houses rallying to your cause. And there's no, then when I'm gone, they won't be able to overthrow you or put you out. He senses what's coming. I think a lot at this moment, he's trying to be decisive, but I think it's a callback to another issue it's kind of like connected to something we've seen before in Game of Thrones again. And I kind of feel like it's a blend of what we saw with Ned and Robert, and when Robert, like, dies. It wasn't smart for Ned not to go and get Joffrey, like was suggested. It wasn't smart to like leave Ned in as the hand and act as if everything was going to be okay by Robert. And I think this episode has more callbacks to Robert and Joffrey and some of the things that have happened than I've seen in any of the other episodes. Like the boar obviously is the obvious thing, going on a hunt, him being very drunk throughout the whole entire thing and really not being like so clear-minded in his decision-making. And I just kind of feel like when I'm looking at this, that he's making a decision that ultimately, again, is leading down where we're going to get to in the main conflict. And I think that was similar. I think the tie-in that I saw the most, kind of like the most to in this, was the White Hart thing, was that I was doing some research and reading, and I kind of like found out and remembered as well. I was reading it, I was like, oh wait, like Joffrey's ship was called the White Hart, and it was the ship that was lost in the Blackwater against Stannis when there was like another conflict about the throne and succession that was happening. And it made me think about this scene that you're talking about, because it really shows again like this moment of like somebody making a really foolhardy decision that leads to a conflict for this throne. And I think like that Viserys keeping her in place and not saying, hey, you know what, this is either going to work this way, I'm going to get you married to this person, or we're going to do this, or we're going to move on, is just sowing the seeds for more conflict. And it really makes me think about the conflicts that we'll see later on in the history of this story. But it just shows you how many times this has happened, that people have thought about and used these different levels of symbols and ideas, but actually in their hoping to please everyone, they please no one, and they set the wheels in motion for conflict.
Yeah, I think that this is a strong decision, right? So we're being told how weak he is, and he struggled. Like, to me, the thing that really, I wouldn't say it was shocking coming from Viserys, but like it was definitely frustrating, was when he says to Allison, you know, I feel like I'm going to, I can't remember the exact quote, I'm going to upset someone to, you know, please someone else.
Yeah.
Something like that.
People pleaser. Classic people pleasing response. 100%.
Okay. I found the quote. I am further doomed to anger one person while pleasing another. Okay, dude, that's the job. Like, yeah, that's leadership.
100%.
Right? So, like, they're telling us how weak he is. But I just don't see this decision as weakness, because there is the easy path here is to sit down Rhaenyra and say, okay, so when I made you heir, it was because I didn't have any other children and I didn't, you know, Daemon couldn't be my heir. I've arranged this wonderful marriage for you to Jason Lannister.
Yeah. Okay.
Or to Ladore Velaryon. Yeah. But we have the customs of our culture say that the male, the first male born is the heir to the throne. So Aegon is now the heir to the throne. You are Aegon's heir until he has children of his own. Like, that would be the easy path. I think no one, like, who's going to get mad over that? Rhaenyra doesn't really have any allies at this point. Like, he could very easily do that. And he doesn't. He decides, I mean, I think the show is saying largely because of love, that he's not going to do this thing to her. He's not going to pass over her. But I don't know if I think, I'm not sure it's a smart decision, but I do think that standing by it is the stronger thing to do, because it would certainly be easier to abandon the whole thing.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, again, another motivation we hear in the first episode where he says that, you know, ever since his grandmother died, King's Landing has gone downhill. And I know I've mentioned that before, and it was a real signaling to me that he had a close relationship with Queen Alysanne. And we all know that she was highly, highly, highly upset that Rhaenys was passed over. And I think that this is one of the things that led to a you know, a rift between her and Jay Harris, like we spoke about.
The second quarrel.
Yeah, the second quarrel.
Where she just, like, bounced for and went to Dragonstone for 2 years. She was so pissed.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think, like, maybe he understands more than you think that he's not totally in on the fact that it just has to be the male line. And maybe he's trying to prove a point here. But I think that that in itself, without setting up the systems to support it, is ill-fated. Like, I think if you're asking me what I would have chose, I would have stuck to my guns and done it. But I would have hopefully been preparing her better than what he is, and she would have been like, yeah, right by my side 110%, so that like I would never have to, like, so that people would see, oh yeah, she's going to be the queen, like hell or high water, and I'm gonna see to it. You know what I mean? I would have been making sure that it was bookend, and I probably wouldn't have married. I mean, like, he's made so many bad decisions. I wouldn't have married into the high. I wouldn't have rose up the high towers. I would have, and this is what he's being kind of chastised by his daughter by. She's like, yeah, you're gonna like link me up with the Lannisters. We're gonna raise up another freaking house that really shouldn't be in the mix. Like right now, like you just did that to the high towers, and she's kind of calling him to the carpet for that. And she says Alicent Hightower like she didn't even know her throughout her whole government.
She does call her my queen. She doesn't call her by her name. It's just that there's some like difficult moments between Alicent and Rhaenyra. Alicent is still attempting to keep the peace, it seems. But as I said last week, I'm sus of Alicent. I think she's a watcher, a waiter, and a listener. Those people are sometimes the best confidants, but sometimes they can use all that stuff against you later.
Yeah, and she's kind of irritated with Viserys. She's like, dude, just make up your mind. Like, what are you going to do? Like, is it better for the realm or is it not? Come on, my dude. Like, you're doing too much. So she's starting to I think she was pretty put off by her dad, too, it seemed like. She was kind of like, yo.
Yeah. Totally, but Alicent is skillful in ways. I think so. One thing I think that we were being asked to do in this episode was just kind of like compare everyone to the other. So, like as I said earlier, like Viserys is out here playing at war, mm-hmm. like Rhaenys said in the first episode, with his tourneys and his hunts, and his brother is actually fighting a real war. Rhaenyra kills a boar like legit on top of her, whereas he's got this stag that's got to be held down and then he can't even kill it properly. Not to say that Rhaenyra didn't have help. She had help from Crispy, but
shouts to the poachers out there that didn't get the job. You know what I mean? Like, listen, one of those poachers would have got that on the first try.
But it's true. The guy who fights the poacher, who caught the poacher, might have been better at this.
Yeah,
this is
exactly.
More his speed than war. But she, so like we're being asked to compare them and their decisive action. But I also think it's interesting to look at Rhaenyra versus Alicent. Rhaenyra is all passion and frustration and fury and anger and action, right? Alicent is extremely emotionally intelligent, like manipulative in ways that I'm not even sure she would recognize as being manipulative. But she's also just like really skilled in dealing with the people in her life, no matter how difficult they are, what the relationship is. Aside from being bullied by her father, she does seem to handle him better now. And she also seems to handle her husband really well.
Mm-hmm.
She's struggling with her stepdaughter because, you know, there's a lot of baggage there. But she's like maneuvering folks in ways that I think we should take note of, because it's a skill set that Rhaenyra probably should be developing herself.
Yeah. But Rhaenyra is not even thinking that way. She's just like brute force. I want to do what I want to do. I think like it's very interesting. The whole like, you know, I don't want to get married. Very similar again. I think I was listening to some of the interviews with Millie Alcock, and she was saying that she auditioned with Arya's needle scene, like talking about, you know, sticking it with the pointy end, and that was what her audition was. And I find it super interesting the amount of Arya stuff that is connected to Rhaenyra in this show. I won't say that it's like that in the books, because it's not. And I just think, like, over and over again, her stance on certain things, just like, I'm gonna be who I want to be, how I want to be, it is very clear, and clearly like a shout to, like, to Arya. And then there's moments obviously where she shows up and you're like, oh, there's Dany, like, you know, like you see it very clearly. But I feel like she's a perfect mashup of the two of those, in my opinion.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I keep thinking about every time Rhaenyra and her father speak, and even her mother in that first episode, that's not me.
Mm-hmm.
Keeps coming to mind, that conversation that Ned had with Arya. You're going to be this great lady. You're going to play by the rules. I think Rhaenyra would have responded the same. That's not me.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So I think it's interesting to look at the two of them next to each other, and just like the other ladies, like Rhaenyra could not have been more bored sitting there listening to Lady Lannister and Lady Redwine and, you know, entertaining their gossip. And, you know, I think we made a comment about, you know, this show being compared to Downton Abbey, you know, by Alan Sepinwall in his review of the show. Boy, did he nail it. This episode was huge Downton Abbey vibes.
Huge Downton Abbey vibes.
I was like, if Downton Abbey had more stakes, like between the hunt, between the, like, the teenage daughters being frustrated,
yeah,
like the women gossiping, it was just like very, I was getting big Downton vibes. But like Rhaenyra didn't belong with those ladies. She didn't feel comfortable with them. She'd much rather speak to Sir Crispy. Like she doesn't want to hang out with these folks. But Alicent seemed to feel right at home and seemed to also understand that this was part of her role, was to entertain these women, even when she can see that Viserys is struggling and she wants to get to him. She's still like playing the role of the queen and entertaining and being hostess. I think it's fascinating to look at how the two of them see their roles differently,
yeah,
and how they want to live their lives. I'm holding out that Alicent will show a little bit more about like her, how she feels, and maybe when they age her up. Because I think right now she's just meant to be kind of, you know, we're not really clear on what she's thinking. She's meant to be a little bit more reticent than anything else. But I think that this comparison is fascinating, just to think about how the two of them deal with conflict and drama and gossip and silliness. They're very different styles.
I agree. I just want to say that we're holding back for the people who have not read the books, because I have definite feelings about both of them. definite feelings. I've dug in.
I was thinking a little bit about this last night. I have definite feelings about both of them. You know this, because I was like really salty, yeah, that like I couldn't go off in this
episode. Yeah, I know.
But the show has kind of changed the way that I look at Alicent, for sure. And it's even making me think a little bit more about like how I look at Cersei or how I look at Margaery, like this, how to play the game. Like, I'm always gonna gravitate towards, you know, Arya, Daenerys, but like there's a role for Sansa's and Cersei's in this world too.
100%.
And maybe an outsized one. So I definitely have different feelings about pretty much all the characters, because George did not add a lot of flavor to this story. Like, I think Corlys Velaryon is the character who is most built out, but all the other ones could essentially be a blank slate. Yeah. And that's why the acting in the show is so phenomenal, because, well, Daemon and Corlys are both very filled out characters. But like Alicent, Viserys, Rhaenyra, I didn't really have much of an impression of them. And now I feel like I do.
Yeah, I agree. I agree.
So just a couple of things that we should probably note. I did want to just acknowledge the symbolism of when Viserys killed that stag. That the stag is the sigil of House Baratheon, who, as far as I could tell, were not present.
Mm-hmm.
So a Targaryen killed the sigil of House Baratheon with a Lannister weapon. Take what you will from that.
Yeah, and a fake, not the white stag, not the one like it's a fake one, like that's a very big precursor for Game of Thrones, right? Like, it's like, you know, Joffrey, we know, was not, you know, a Baratheon, even though he goes around in style as a Baratheon, we know that that's not the case. So it's like really interesting, and there's other connotations to that scene, but I thought it was very interesting that here's a Lannister weapon killing a stag. And the guy, you know, is literally saying, like, yeah, this is not the white stag, but, you know, hey, whatever.
He'll do.
It'll do. You know what I mean? Like, so, and I also think that, again, tied into Joffrey. Joffrey's fleet being, this is another Easter egg, being called the White Hart. Like, his ship, like, that, again, that was fought against the Baratheons. So it's a very, very interesting tie-in to that, for sure. Again, Rhaenyra jumps on a horse running away from the camp. The horse happens to be a white horse. She also runs into the white stag, who she lets go. I personally saw that as like a tie-in to like that moment in King's Landing where Arya is riding the white horse of death, and all those things are happening in King's Landing after Dany burns the city down. I know that
we don't talk about that.
Huh?
We don't talk about that scene.
I know. Where Dany burns. I know. That's... We're very, very upset about what is happening. No question. I am. I still get tight thinking about it. But I just think that there is, you know, there's things I can't say right now or choose not to say right now. But I do think that there is a lot of connection to what Rhaenyra is learning about the mission of the Targaryen family and the moments that we saw in those later in Game of Thrones. And I think that from a lineage standpoint, it has a general thread that has been hard to talk around. And we've talked about this offline. We are talking around it because we don't want to spoil the show for certain people, but there will be an episode at the end of this season where maybe we'll do a spoiler episode. We'll talk about these threads that kind of connect, are the connective tissue between these characters that run generations through. And it's just a fascinating thing that she would acknowledge this symbol of majesty, of Arthurian, like what they talk about, Arthurian legends of divine purity, but also of being like the kingdom, the king of the forest before the dragons came, and she would acknowledge it and it would acknowledge her, and then she would let it go off into the world, and that would then, that it would live on, that it would live on by letting it go out into the world. And that's all I'll say at that point.
Yeah, and also Daenerys was gifted a white horse by Khal Drogo.
Mm-hmm.
So there's also that as well, that connection between her and Daenerys. Was there anything else? Because I know we wanted to talk about one last thing that is more of a meta piece.
Yeah, I think like one of the things that came to mind as I saw Viserys sitting in the royal tent. And you see the camera zoom out and the conversations become nondescript. And he's obviously intoxicated at this moment. But you can see that by looking at him, that he feels also isolated. And you see Daemon, who really has been going through it later in the episode, and he feels isolated. And Rhaenyra has all but expressed how isolated she feels, and he can acknowledge it. And it just reminded me of Maester Aemon, you know, talking to Sam and saying, you know, a Targaryen alone in the world is a terrible thing. And I just think about that because I feel like they would be so much stronger if they just could figure out a way, like you said, to have the conversations. And if the strength that you see from Damon, if he was standing right next to his brother, and if Rhaenyra was right next to, like, almost in the bosom of her dad, and you had Rhaenys and Corlys right with him, and Lenore and Lena right there in the mix, that's the real strength of the house. And Viserys, in trying to please everybody, has, in my opinion, really dismantled the strength of his house and pushed his house aside for in a way that's really hard to understand. And I'll just go on this last little rant. There's only one man in the realm that consistently gives him solid advice. It is his job
solid
to do so.
Solid political advice.
Solid political advice. Let's talk about the makeup of the small council. There is the Master of Coin. The Master of Coin, my man Beesbury, he has started a very profitable fan duel of the realm. He's betting on side joust. He's got the gold cloaks, their money. He's funded tourneys. He's accomplished. Corlys Velaryon has taken his leave to be the master of ships because the king would not listen to him when he was talking about political things, like strategic military things that needed to happen. He's the master of ships for a reason. Lionel Strong is really, really, really an MVP out in these streets. He continuously gives him the right play, and he is the master of fucking laws. Like, his job is to tell you what is legally feasible, what is a great, like, policy. It's like going to your general counsel and be like, yeah, okay, cool, whatever. We're going to go do this other thing. He's told him numerous times. And here comes fucking the hand of the king, who throws out these theories that make no sense. Like, he's just out of the blue, just, like, pulling shit from the sky. Like, you know what would be really cool? What if this happened? And what if that happened? Oh, my God, look at this mythological creature. We should do that. And every single fucking time, Lionel Strong is like, well, Your Grace, you really should think about it this way. You got the richest guy in the realm. You got your family that's kind of splintered. I think you should go and, like, repair this. This is, like, they're pure Valyrian blood. I live in the castle where they turned it into marshmallows. I see what they can do. If you guys were the strongest, you would be fine. And this motherfucker Viserys, all he does is hand wave him, pat him on the back, go ahead and just do it. And I don't understand why the master of laws does not have more respect. He knows the laws.
I have nothing to say except you're right. I agree that Lionel Strong is giving the most sage advice, and he is also apparently at this moment the least ambitious member. He seems to actually care about the realm. I think that one piece of symbolism we didn't talk about but was there is that Viserys is now missing two fingers on his hand, and his hand of the king is also garbage. I'm just saying, the man's hand is rotting, his literal hand.
Yes.
And the hand of the king is trash, trying to manipulate him, probably to the downfall of his house. Like, it's not... It's not subtle.
Yeah, and this was the class. This is like the classic, like, I want to be something, but it, like, the shit that you are is right in front of your face. Like, he's like, there's very few dreamers in prophecy, and I believe in the prophecies. My guy, the prophecy is unfolding on your body, like, right now. Like, it's, you've lost two fingers, Damon and Rhaenyra, you're losing them.
It's absurd. The whole dreamer thing, I was on team go claim a dragon.
Go claim a fucking dragon.
When he said that, he was like, many are dragon riders, but not many of us are dreamers. And I was like, yeah, your dreams suck. Go get a dragon.
Go claim a dragon. Like, get out there and find Vhagar. Get out there and find, like, go to the dragon pit. Do anything. Dude, like, you got teenagers out here in full armor riding dragons and taking out armies, and you're like, well, I need a little help with killing this stag. Who? what is happening?
Poor guy. Ugh. What a mess. What a mess.
All right. Well,
anything else we want to talk about the episode? Because I still want to talk to the fandom because I'm having some feelings.
No, let's talk. Let's go more. Let's talk about that.
Okay. I don't want to go long because this has been a long podcast already. And we are here to talk about House of the Dragon. And we do try to stay away from the meta stuff and, you know, stuff that's not part of the story, unless it's like an interview that can inform the story itself. Mm-hmm. That said, this past weekend, Rings of Power also premiered on Amazon. Mm-hmm. Everyone should go watch it. And some of you who've been listening to the podcast for a while may remember that I lost my temper a little bit on the Witcher wrap-up talking about the fandoms complaining about characters of color and women. I think I said like one sentence.
It was fine. Like, it was totally fine. And on point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some people framed it as I went off, but I think I said like one sentence.
Yeah.
What I want to say is that this past weekend, I witnessed more racism and misogyny demonstrated online in multiple spaces. It wasn't just Reddit. It was out there on Twitter, in ways that like make it really hard to be a fan of the work and engage with the fandom. And I just want to, one, acknowledge it. Yes, it is happening. There are people saying really awful things about the fact that there are some a handful of characters of color in Rings of Power, that the Valyrian family is a Black family. We've seen this before. People lost their mind that The Witcher had, you know, Black elves, that Wheel of Time was so centered on the women protagonists and also included many people of color in its cast. This needs to be rooted out of the fandoms. There's no space for this. These stories are based on imagination. Mm-hmm. If you cannot make space for women and for people of color, for the literal global majority to be in these stories, then you have no business in fantasy.
Yeah.
And one of the things that really irritates me is the constant callback to, it's not historically accurate. Neither are dragons, neither are fairies or elves. Like, what are you talking about? Like, yes, these stories are largely based on a Western Europe type of medieval time. Okay, let me just address that for a moment. I'm going to quote a little bit from an author that you may be aware of, N.K. Jemisin.
Love her.
Great stuff. She has won the Hugo Award 3 times.
Three.
So,
Trace. It's a three-peat. Three-peat.
No big deal. Yeah. Just a little known author. She gave a speech in 2014, and it's mostly about fighting back against the violence and threats that the content creators face in the game design, writing fiction, just creators, and creatives world. But this particular part stood out to me when I read it this weekend. How many of you have heard that epic fantasy or video games set in medieval Europe need not include people of color because there weren't any? I love the medieval POC blog for introducing simple visual evidence of how people like me were systematically and literally excised from history. The result is a fantasy readership that will defend to the death the idea that dragons belong, but those people don't. And that's what y'all are saying to us. Like, we're cool with mythical animals. We're cool with wizards. We think that elves are cool as long as they look exactly like us. And it just, like, it is making it so unpleasant to engage with fan communities that I otherwise would absolutely love. But this has to stop. These stories are Eurocentric, sure, but they're also fictional. And by the way, people of color have existed this whole time. We didn't just pop up in the 90s. We've been around the whole time.
Yeah.
So I'm a little bit frustrated. No, I'm a lot frustrated by this whole discourse. It's been a thing that I think that nerds have been dealing with for a very long time. And I think that because fantasy has become so mainstream, this is the time that we need to root it out and call it out when it happens. It is unacceptable. Like, I saw today a billionaire who will go, I will never mention on this podcast, who will go nameless, talking about how all the men in Rings of Power were weak and the only character who was strong was the female elf. It's been two episodes, dude. Have you met all the characters? Like, what are you even complaining about? That's your takeaway from this beautiful world that they created, that they reimagined? That's your takeaway. Anyway, I'm done. Rant over.
Yeah, I think that this is an important conversation that we have. And I'm so glad that you're bringing it up. You know, we often talk offline about, okay, are we even going to acknowledge the meta stuff? Are we going to acknowledge some of the conversations? And we pretty much were going to ignore a lot of the noise for the podcast. And then the noise got really loud and it started getting vitriolic. And we started seeing it in, you know, some of our favorite podcasters, people who are in, you know, fandom communities, on official pods, on not official pods, on big podcast networks, small podcast networks. You start going to some of their threads, I mean, and you start seeing, you know, when the commentary about some other podcasts is like, oh, we don't want to hear two women speaking about, you know, Game of Thrones, or you go into other podcast threads and it's like kind of like co-signing that people of color don't belong in Rings of Power. It's hard to stay silent. It's actually impossible to stay silent. As a creative, as a person who not only we're podcasters, but we also work on our own creative projects, it's one of the things where, for me, I can just honestly say, it's one of the reasons why we wanted to podcast, is that we saw a pushback from our actual existence in fan spaces. And I would say that people that listen to this podcast, by and large, we don't know all of you, but for the most part, I think would probably agree that we need diversity in these stories. The people that we've encountered that are kinfolk, that are part of like our fan base that I know of, have really been supportive. But we're not we're a small little band, and we should expand this conversation, and we should definitely be pushing these conversations because it's far overdue. I didn't even think about it when I was watching Lord of the Rings, the Rings of Power, until some of the conversations came up, and I was like, well, why have I never, as much as I've watched all the movies, why have I never engaged with the fandom? Why have I kind of, you know, pulled back? And I would say that it was similar to the reason why, as much as I've watched Empire Strikes Back, I don't know, over 100 times. As a kid, it was a running joke that I had watched it maybe like 60 times as a young person. You know, and I think that later in life, I realized how toxic the fan base was, how it was like whenever a person of color showed up, it was like, oh, wait, we're not. So we don't belong in space. We don't belong in fantasy worlds. You know, the orcs are, one of my friends earlier today was like, yeah, he always felt like they were like making commentary that was pretty racist when you were like almost like representing people of color through like being beast in stories. And so I've always wondered, well, why did I not feel like I could get close to Lord of the Rings like fandom? And I kind of feel like on a subconscious level, I didn't see any part of myself, or, you know, I've had other women say to me they didn't see parts of themselves in the actual world. And I still like the story. Like, just full disclosure, I watched Rings of Power. I think it's one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen on TV. But again, it makes it, as you're saying, Andrea, very hard to engage with the fan base. And this is what we do, is engage with fan bases, you know, as a podcast. when your very presence on the screen is questioned at every single turn. So I think this is a conversation that we need to have. I hope that we can continue to speak to, I hope we can continue to have more diversity, and it becomes so natural that these conversations don't come up. It has become like, hey, this is just normal. But I think that we should always be having the conversation to make sure that we're not sugarcoating it. And we debated it. We debated, are we even going to acknowledge this? And I think you were right to say, yeah, we need to acknowledge this. And I'm glad that you did. I'm glad that we did.
Yeah, I think it's worth talking about. I don't think we should, you know, harp on it, because I agree with you. I think we're preaching to the choir a little bit. You know, I think most of our listeners know what we're about, and, you know, wouldn't gravitate towards this podcast. So this was not meant to be like a lecture at anyone, like listeners. But I do think that if you care about fantasy and you care about these stories remaining popular, which is the only way we're continuing to get them.
Yeah.
You know, this is worth challenging when you see it come up, because it's hard to be a fan and engage with these stories the way that they're intended to be engaged with, which is through podcasts and YouTube videos and TikTok. And like, they want the people who write these things want us to be engaging in the fan community, and to feel like you can't do that without potentially seeing something harmful is a terrible place to be. And I want to say that this is not just something that impacts, you know, people of color and women. This is also something that, you know, gay, lesbian, transgendered people experience day to day too. And I just think that we should all take an active role in calling it out when it happens, instead of just like just accepting it and rolling our eyes. Like, I'm not telling you, you have to engage with people who, you know, are going to harm you, or you feel are going to harm you, or, you know, in conversations that might be toxic. But I am saying, if you feel comfortable to do it, you then take a second and do it. You know, call out the racism for what it is, call out the transphobia and misogyny for what it is. Like, I think that these people have to, we belong here, they do not. So let's make them feel uncomfortable for a while.
Even one of the characters we spoke about today, there's a derogatory term for that character that I won't even say. And it's because there's a lot of ableist sentiment in Westeros as well. And we won't talk about that. But this person has, we mentioned that he has a handicap, but they have a different name for him. We didn't mention that name. Purposely, I didn't. And I know Andrea didn't, because we were like, wait, that's what they go by, but we're not going to call him that, right? So this is like, that's like a conscious decision that we're making to like make sure that our community, the kin folklore community, is inclusive. And I don't know. I hope we can get past some of this, because I've seen the debates, and to me, it can take away from the enjoyment that fans have if we're not careful.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, here we go. We are gonna move past all of this and keep pushing. Remember to go ahead and leave your comments, give us feedback. If you have thoughts about what we were just talking about, hit us up at kinfolklore@gmail.com. Hit us up at kinfolklorepod on Instagram, Twitter. Join our Facebook group. We really appreciate all you guys listening. We look forward to next week, and we'll see you next time.
Bye, everyone.